This episode of Film Sack is brought to you by you at patreon.com/frogpants. If you enjoy this show and you like what we're doing here on the network, consider even just $1 a month over at patreon.com/frogpants.
My reminiscence. I always thought that for such a lovely river, the name was mystifying, Cape Fear. And the only thing to fear on those enchanted summer nights was that the magic would end and real life would come crashing in.
This is Film Sack. Oh, sure.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Film Sack. This is Film Sack, episode 331, mining the very depths of entertainment for all mankind. Entertainment. Joining me, Scott Johnson, today is Brian. You wouldn't believe how long he can stare at a teddy bear done away.
With a pearl necklace. Hey, guys. Man, this movie had it all. Juliette Lewis's debut on the big screen and perhaps our first exposure to underage finger porn on Film Sack. A ripped up and visually readable De Niro playing a hillbilly hick who done went to prison and got himself edumacated for revenge. Some Harry Potter style hand sorting to identify Nick Nolte's gun house. Hufflepuff 38 special. And finally, the answer to a question that has nagged me since the 70s. Whatever happened to the Shaggy DA? Well, apparently, Wilby Daniels was poisoned to death while investigating Sam Bowden for complaints of burying evidence as a defense lawyer in Atlanta. Mm. Wilby, who was in a canine form, Shaggy, found himself on the tangy end of some deadly payback in the form of a tainted doggy treat, a plan formulated by John Slade and Katie, who met in prison. In canis corpo transmuto. Job done.
Man, you're on some drugs. Also, it wasn't her film debut, but that's okay.
Yes, I can hear the keyboard warriors on our comments right now. Yeah. It's not even close.
Not even close.
No,
she's her first movie. She was in a bunch of TV, but her first movie in theaters was My Stepmother Was an Alien, and then Christmas Vacation.
Count that piece of shit.
That's still a movie. Right? It's a screen debut.
She was in Christmas Vacation like over 2 years before.
So everything I said, my whole film theory of the Shaggy DA, you pick out the... Okay, sorry.
Because right now we're trying to save somebody from having to write a 400-word comment on our blog.
Yeah, we know what's up. We know what we got to do. All right, well, anyway, so there's that. Also with us, Randy, he'd be happy to ride all the way there under your Jeep Cherokee Jordan.
Aloha, Scott. Brian.
Hi.
Did I ever tell you guys about the time I rented houseboats to white folks with ridiculously inauthentic North Carolina accents?
No.
Now, if you're thinking about getting into that business, you need to remember the three rules. Number one, never check the incoming weather. You're gonna lose some customers to freak hurricanes, but you'll lose them after you got their money. Two, carry a ton of insurance on your rentals. People are going to damage the nice rails of the houseboat with their freaky handcuffs. They're going to bleed all over the interior, and they're going to set each other on fire. Mm. Remember, the customer is always wrong. And three, never look under the car your customers drive in. Superman tattooed psycho killer supernatural crime being might be under there, and you don't want to make eye contact. Remember, you have insurance. Don't look under the car.
Now, is that what he was doing, renting? I thought he owned it.
I thought he owned it, but maybe I had that wrong in my head because she was always talking about
the lady watched him. Sure enough, watched him drop off, and he's like, "Sup?"
Yeah,
I swear to God, if you deconstruct my joke, I'm gonna hang out outside the house.
Well, you know, we gave it Dunaway some heat for getting it wrong about Juliette Lewis's career. It's fine. Finally, with us, Brian, thumb up and thumbs in, Ibbot.
Oh.
Wow.
That's my my prom date right there. Yeah. I saw this film back in the 90s, and I didn't remember it being this scary. I mean, Robert De Niro jumping out of nowhere with a burnt-up face and a knife? Holy crap, that's scary. And working his way into the heart of your family by befriending your vulnerable teenage daughter while she's at her most susceptible? Mm-hmm. Oh, my God, that's scary, too. But the scariest thing? Having some obnoxious asshole smoking and laughing inappropriately right in front of me while I'm trying to watch Problem Child.
Yep.
That one keeps me up at night.
All I can think about was Brian Nibbett's experience in movie theaters and how that was like the most ironic scene of all time for him. I just thought, oh my gosh, Brian's loving this. It's
a solid opening. I couldn't poke holes in.
Yeah, see, this movie in reality would have been only 5 minutes long because they would have gone to the movies. Right. And the entire audience would have bludgeoned De Niro to death.
Yeah. That would have been the end of it. There's how you those alternate movie story things they do on YouTube. That's how you fix this movie.
I'd say the audience that goes and sees Problem Child in the theater isn't the most discerning. You know, like they're probably at that point saying, we could walk out. I'm all right.
Was Problem Child?
I'm all right not seeing the rest
of this. That was around the same time, right? I don't remember when that movie came out.
Yeah, they were like a year or two before.
Okay. I don't remember any Jack Tripper movies outside of Jack Tripper on Three's Company. I never saw any of
those. Problem Child series. That thing ran for several movies,
three, I think, in theaters and then a whole bunch of direct-to-video. But I think Ritter was only involved with the first two.
Oh, right. And he was like, I'm out.
But Scott, Sling Blade? You saw Sling Blade.
Mm-hmm. I did. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like
what do you think about mustard on biscuits? What do you?
Well, I like mustard on biscuits. I like French fried dough. French fried dough.
Why? Is that a Kaiser blade you have there?
Yeah, I forget how he says it.
I call it a sling blade.
Oh yeah, no, I like sling blade. Why? What does that have to do with this?
It has John Ritter in it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's right. I forgot he was in that. Yes, no.
And you know what else has John Ritter? The Rob Reiner film North.
Oh, I never saw North.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Everyone told me to avoid North because it was going to tarnish what I thought of Rob Reiner. So I didn't watch it.
Oh, it's all right. Yeah, it's not spectacular.
So you think your opinion of Meathead would get lower? Is that what you're...
Well, I mean, I like Princess Bride. I like Spinal Tap. I like a million things that he's made. And that one sounded like a real bummer. That was Frodo, right? Was in that?
Yeah,
yes,
real young.
That's correct.
Real young Frodo.
Mm-hmm. All right. Yeah. Well,
I watch a John Ritter movie every year. His last movie, Bad Santa.
Oh,
I didn't know he was in that too.
I haven't seen Bad Santa
so
yet.
Funny
I'm, so,
in that
I'm
movie.
Such a bad.
By the way,
person.
Ritter was only in the first two Problem Childs, and only the first two released in theaters. The third one, straight to TV, is a TV movie, and they replaced John Ritter with the greatest American hero, William Catt.
Oh, wow.
Really? That's
how
a great
weird
choice.
That they were on TV sitcoms at the same time, roughly.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, right.
So I guess I wouldn't call
American Hero isn't
it? It wasn't a sitcom. It was just on TV at the same time.
Yeah,
right.
I found it amusing that it was on TV.
The fact that it existed at all, honestly, is still kind of weird. I really like John Ritter. That's the funny thing is I think he's a super interesting guy, and I feel terrible that he died as early as he did and all of that. But never saw a Problem Child movie. Never saw and then forgotten he was in those Billy Bob Thornton movies. That's two Billy Bob Thornton movies he's in then. He's in Sling Blade. What was the other one you said?
Bad Santa.
Bad Santa, yeah. That's crazy.
Here's a weird thing.
Problem Child movies are horrendous. They are borderline unwatchable.
But they're
I can't
they were
wait
very,
till we do one on film.
Right. They were definitely marketed towards straight-to-video for kids kind of movies, it seems like. They really flourished in the video market, and that and the Beethoven series also did really well during that time.
Oh, the the dogs, the dog.
Yeah, the Saint Bernard. Yeah.
Right. Slobbery dog.
And who was in that? At first, it was the guy from Midnight Run with De Niro.
Right.
Groden.
Groden, Charles Groden. Yep,
Charles Groden. Yeah.
I like Charles Groden a lot.
Yeah, I do too.
He's pretty great. Anyway, but that's got nothing to
Beethoven.
Do with Cape Fear.
Then tell me what you think about
it. Okay, let's watch Beethoven for this show. Cape Fear is the movie we're talking about this week, the 1991 Martin Scorsese-directed remake of a film of the same name that is a lot older than this one, but also features the
1962.
Yeah, was it 62? That's right.
Mm-hmm.
And those...
Right, so these two movies are 30 years apart. That's quite a gap. For a remake, don't you think?
Yeah, totally,
yeah.
And especially these days.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
But also think about it for a second. A remake today of something 30 years ago is Ghostbusters. So it's not really. Yeah. I mean, it seems like it.
No,
at the time.
I'm saying it's quite a gap. You're going to have very different techniques and very different point to make. right?
Mm-hmm. Right, right. Definitely different time. I mean, they talk about something that Randy said about this movie that he didn't care for was all the sexual, the rape and everything else, and this inappropriateness between De Niro and Juliette Lewis. And yeah, so it talks about a totally different message than you would have seen during the 60s version. And this was very modern for this time. There was a huge boom during the 80s and 90s in California, where there was a lot of the average teen pregnancy was conceived by a teenage girl with a man over 25.
Jeez.
So this was something that was very topical.
Gross.
The time.
Well, and right. I watched a little Scorsese documentary after this film to kind of get his take on making the movie. Mm. And right. I mean, flat out, he liked the original and he wanted to make it as modern as possible. He wanted it to be mm-hmm. gory and he wanted it to be scary and he wanted to push the envelope on the theme, the rape theme. It's dripping with rape. There's so many referenced rapes in this film.
Yeah.
And that was his intention. So right. like he even kind of laughs at the original being sort of a family who sings songs together. And
what kind of laughing is it? Was it laughing at Problem Child kind of laughing while smoking a cigar? Or was it?
I've got some pretty good clips of that. We'll play later on the show. But yeah, it's definitely a modern take on things. I didn't know Scorsese directed it. I didn't see it at the time. This is my first viewing. I've seen a lot of Scorsese movies. This one is very different, I think, from anything else he makes.
Right.
And I've seen most of them. I think the only one I haven't seen is that DiCaprio one where he goes to an island that's haunted or something.
Oh, The Island?
Which is one of his better movies.
Not The Island.
Not The Island.
Shutter Island.
Shutter Island. I've never seen Shutter Island, so I don't know what's up there. And I haven't seen, there's a few others.
Did you see Bring Out the Dead, Nicolas Cage ambulance?
I would just want to run down some things here because Scorsese has an amazing list. It's Taxi Driver, it's Raging Bull, it's The King of Comedy, The Color of Money, The Last Temptation of Christ, Goodfellas, The Age of Innocence, Casino, Gangs of New York, his best film in my opinion, The Aviator, The Departed, Shutter Island. This is a man who has made a Wolf of Wall Street. He's made a series of some of the greatest films ever made. He's won so many awards that you can't even begin to name them all. Mm-hmm. And then this piece of shit.
and
the problem is I'm comparing this movie to freaking Gangs of New York. And it's just an unfair comparison.
Yeah, well, it is an unfair comparison. Because, I mean, he's done, we mentioned the was it Bringing Out the Dead, the Nicolas Cage one where he's an ambulance driver on cocaine. You've got After Hours, which I really enjoy, but didn't do well at all. Color of Money, which again was no hustler, did finally get Paul Newman an Oscar. I don't know. I mean, I feel like for every Goodfellas you can name, you can also name a not so good Scorsese film.
Yeah,
and I feel like this one's almost right in the middle.
Go ahead, Brian. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say that I really think that this was really, as far as homage films go, this is great. I think that he really captured Hitchcock's influence that resonated in the original. And I think he kept you feeling uncomfortable like you would see in a Hitchcock movie. And he hired the title sequencer who did Hitchcock's films in the past. I mean, it had a real flavor of Hitchcock in it. And I think for what it was and what I think his intention was, I think he was very successful at it. Sure. Now, is it an uncomfortable movie and it's not for everybody? Absolutely.
Oh, yeah, no
but
question.
As far as a film study goes, it's interesting.
Here's the thing, though. It's also his most commercially successful by huge amounts of money. Wow. Yeah. It's made more money than any other film he ever made. And
he got great actors at a time when he was able to get them relatively cheaply. I say there were producers involved in this movie. Mm-hmm. And all of the film stuff, you know, like the special effects are all kind of silly and cheap, and he doesn't, you know, like there's no real, like, I don't know, cars being flipped or expensive properties that had to be rented. Just a shitty old houseboat. Like, I gotta that's last time I'm gonna use that word.
And they didn't even do it on a river. It was in a soundstage with a 20,000 gallons of water or something. There's like a bunch of story about that. But and it was his first optical effect, so De Niro on fire wasn't real. It looked okay, but it definitely looked like it was, you know, overlaid or something was weird going there.
Yeah.
But it was the first time he'd ever dabbled in that. It was also the one movie, if you think about it, it's the most mainstream of his movies. The rest of them are all like he's the most successful art house filmmaker of all time, probably.
Right. This definitely felt like definitely felt like Scorsese was trying to figure out where he wanted to grow towards. I'd also like to put this film in maybe let's start thinking about kind of what could have happened alternately. This movie was originally in Steven Spielberg's hand, and he swapped it with Scorsese for Schindler's List.
Yep.
So can you imagine those directors flipped on those two movies?
Oh,
they would
have
a totally different film history because those are huge movies.
Yeah, and
Schindler's List with Scorsese would have been weird. It just would have. I don't know. Would have felt wrong. Right. Like thinking about the way Scorsese delivers, you know, he's great with gangs and a clear cut bad guy gangster dude like Max Cady and like Bickle, Travis Bickle in Taxi Driver.
Just makes these nervous camera moves and these kind of I don't think the styles work at all. I think it was the right choice to swap these movies
for sure. Yeah.
Well, and he named Scorsese name dropped Spielberg a few times in the making of this thing. He, he really looks up to Spielberg. You can tell, but he also feels like he is he has a big difference from Spielberg, which is I'm totally adding some things to what he said, but you get the impression that he thinks Spielberg would have made the first Cape Fear.
Mm-hmm.
And that he's gonna take those Spielbergian family people and torture them. Mm-hmm. Like he wants to see them suffer.
Yeah, that's totally his MO. And they're pals. They're like best friends. They grew up in this film school at the same time. They have mutual respect for each other. It's like him, Scorsese, the freaking what's his name, the Godfather guy, I can't think of his name.
Coppola.
Francis Ford Coppola, and then Lucas. These guys are all just sort of there at the same time, coming up at the same time, and they all have these their own weird and unique voices, and they go off in their own directions. And I love that. But this is also the very first Amblin Entertainment, which is Spielberg's production company. It's the first rated R film they ever made.
Yeah.
And so he had backed it. It says in the trivia it was his idea to have De Niro wear the maid's outfit and wig.
Yeah, the psycho moment.
Which is super, I was going to say it's super Hitchcockian. Like
everything about this thing is Hitchcockian.
Did you see it coming? Because, no. I mean, I saw it coming from a mile away because I'm like, oh, she hasn't turned around yet. And I'm like, oh, we're
I was too distracted
we're
by that.
Hitchcocked.
Yeah. That Pepto-Bismol cocktail that Joe Don Baker was making up. Holy crap.
Freaking Joe Don Baker, dude. Man.
Dude.
That guy.
Love that guy.
Yeah, he's great. Yeah.
There's a bunch of character actors in this film that are just great. Yeah. Just spot on for the role, except almost no one knew how to do the accent.
Yeah.
Like, I've been waiting to ask Brian Dunaway, have you ever in all your time in the Carolinas heard anyone who sounded like Nick Nolte, Jessica Lange, or Robert De Niro?
No. And you could kind of forgive Nick Nolte and Jessica Lange because they weren't from there. They had moved.
Right. They were transplant characters. Yeah.
Right. So, but the local guys, they were terrible. And then De Niro's weird come out however you went with that, because he had one accent the whole movie, and then when he was doing the come out thing, I was like, who is he suddenly
am I the only one who thought that he was impersonating David Patrick Kelly from The Warriors?
A little bit.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I didn't even make that connection.
A little bit.
That I don't know where else to place his accent. Like, it's so weird.
Yeah. By the way, I want to tell you that we're dancing around the themes a little bit, or the overall arc of this thing, which is it's basically a revenge stalker movie. And
It's the house invasion.
I genuinely freak out. Those themes freak me out. I don't like them normally.
Yeah.
Didn't bother me so much in this one, but there's an intensity to that kind of stalker thing that really gets to me. And the other movie I was thinking of the whole time was Single White Female for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
It's when you've got somebody who cannot be reasoned with, is
this, you can't reason with him, you can't stop him, you can't kill him.
Yeah, kind of like that. Like there's this amoral, like no way around it sort of vibe to a stalker type situation that's that right. is my true horror movie. Like horror movies with guys slashing people because they have, you know, hockey masks on, big deal, who cares, it's not right. It's just stupid. But this sort of thing, I don't know why, but it just feels like,
because this time is personal,
I guess.
Right.
I guess.
And it feels like at the beginning, like before you know they have a connection, it feels like De Niro just kind of singles him out because he irritated him at the movie theater then starts following him and his family. And you're like, man, you know, at the beginning, you're feeling like just one different thing you could have done and you wouldn't be in this mess. And then you find out, okay, there is a connection between these characters.
Yeah.
And,
Scorsese definitely played that well, because before you realize that's what's going on, you do. I mean, almost every man in America, if you've got a family or been with a girlfriend or something, when you go to the movie theater and someone's acting a fool and everybody looks to you to man up and to go and approach the guy. And of course, your fear is that you're going to approach him then and it's going to be diffused. But then when you leave the theater, he's going to be sitting out in his Mustang watching you smoking his big wet cigar.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there he is. There he is driving a Mustang. Then the next day, he's going to take your car keys and say, I've never held any of these. Oh, you liar. I just saw you driving a car yesterday.
A nice Mustang yesterday.
What a dumb line.
I'll never forget. I mean, for me, it hits real life in some ways because I had this, this is a while ago, but there was some Twitter troll using an egg avatar who was hell bent on saying horrible things about my daughters online.
Yeah.
And at the time, and it turned out to be toothless and he's just a puss and whatever. He never, you know, that guy wouldn't last 5 minutes in a room with me. But there's something about that that is so much further down the line of what I think is horror that that's very effectively showcased in this movie. It's enough out of time, and it's enough. There's enough goof in here. There's some kind of almost like a cartoon element to it sometimes that it softened that or lessened that for me and made it seem a little more goofy. Lots of Scorsese zoom cuts. The music score is ridiculous. Like, there's some stuff that just makes it less.
And that's underlined by the fact that I think we've all seen that Simpsons episode.
Yes. The Sideshow Bob kind of.
That's almost like a shot for shot remake of this with Sideshow Bob. Yeah, exactly. Chasing the family and
the car
and following.
Fear.
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
Yeah. And that was a great, if you haven't seen that, it's great, by the way. Really funny episode.
Another problem here is that I've seen Unlawful Entry. It took me most of the movie to stop expecting Kurt Russell to show up. That movie just, for whatever reason, Unlawful Entry feels to me more like Cape Fear than Cape Fear.
Oh, weird.
Right. And for starters, Ray Liotta is just the worst, scariest bad guy and confidant guy. It was just such ridiculously bad.
Oh, really? I didn't see that, but he creeps the crap out of me.
Yeah. Usually.
Would you call that your favorite? Now, I was thinking about this, and this to me is a psychological thriller, but this is really a home invasion film, and I was trying to think of my favorites. And so would you say Unlawful Entry, is that perhaps your favorite?
Well, it's not my favorite. I hate the movie because I hate the character because I, you know, like, so
he's a cop. Is that, he's
a cop that Kurt Russell and, what's her name?
Jeremy
Madeline
Piven.
Stowe.
Oh, Madeline Stowe.
Oh, Madeline Stowe. Right.
They,
I totally remember that.
Yeah. He gets too close to them while investigating a mysterious, breaking entering at their house.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then it just spins into Cape Fear territory. But he's really smart and clever. Everyone in Cape Fear is dumb as a freaking post.
Yeah, they're all dumb as rocks. And you're not wrong.
Except for De Niro.
Well,
no, even De Niro. They have to make everyone else extra dumb so that he can be kind of dumb. Like his attention to words and phrases, and he doesn't quite use them right, and this kind of thing.
Yeah, I got some clips of some words where I still don't know what he said. So we'll share those later. But I agree. Like, but there was a spate of these. Another good example would be the the Michael Douglas,
Fatal Attraction.
Fatal Attraction. Like any of these obsessive things. Ugh, I just
single white female.
They really play to my worst fears.
Robin Williams, 1 hour photo.
Yeah, 1 hour photo. Movie. I hate that movie for that.
What about
reason.
Bob? Well, all right. What about Bob is the comedy version of this.
Sure, but there are other comedy versions. Like I was just thinking of one when Randy was talking, and I forgot what it was. But there's something like I can't think of it. But yeah, I mean, clearly it's a theme that's been around forever. It's just once in a while they'll do it in a way that just makes me squirm and want to lock the doors and get my own little handgun, conceal and carry that thing.
Let me see your hand, Scott.
Yeah. Thanks, Jodan Baker, for bringing the world's tiniest pistol to this defense of our lives.
It was like a Derringer, one of those little ones you flip out of your shirt or whatever. That's what that reminded me of.
Was
that his spirit's gun animal thing that he had going on? Because that was the one he picked?
I don't know. Weird. All I know
is... What was with the 100-pound test line attached to a bear with a pearl necklace?
Microfilament, whatever it was. Yeah.
What was that?
It's stupid is what it was. Listen, they're doing Southern justice, man. They're down there with their tiny guns and their fish line, and they're going to catch the guy before he does anything. And I guess
I'm going to do it again. Yeah. It actually did something.
Yeah.
This Colt 380 that he has is actually called a Colt Detective Special.
Wow.
Oh,
it's actually I could see how you might look at that and go, oh, well, he's a detective. Mm. He needs the detective special.
Or he was one.
True story.
But I'm telling you this right now, I will pay you money that says that Jodan Baker cannot sit in a chair that long and stare at a bear that long without falling asleep.
That was the worst plan. There is no way anyone could stay up all night just staring at a teddy bear.
Yeah. My favorite. Just get a little bell, right? Just put a little bell on it.
Hold on. You jump past all the details of the plan that are so bad. We're going to go to the airport and you're going to buy a ticket and you're going to go get on a plane, but you're not. You're going to sneak out and we're going to count on what if the bad guy doesn't give a shit? What do you do then? This was such a complicated plan.
Exactly. I mean, he cares more about the family. He's just going to go to the airport and follow them back and see, oh, look, he's back with them. He just kind of acted like he was getting on a plane.
And send them somewhere safe. Why would you keep your family
as bait. They didn't need to be there.
Yeah,
we got to keep them made because, you know, we we lose Scott.
Expendable.
Yeah.
What'd you go look up, Scott?
I didn't look anything up. I'm just listening to this great story. here's some stuff. So the accent that De Niro used, this was confirmed by, I think, some of that commentary that's on the DVD version of this thing from Scorsese confirms this. But De Niro would call Martin Scorsese and leave weird voice messages in that voice because it used to freak him out. I love this idea that these two collaborators that have worked for so long together, I love that one of them is dicking with the other one with his creepy voice at night. I think that's kind of awesome. The scene in the high school auditorium, let's get to that. Oh, I know what I was going to say. Somebody said, what did you say, Brian? Somebody said something that made me think of the thumb in the mouth thing. I was going to say that's some unlawful
thumbs up and in and out or whatever.
That's the unlawful entry right there, is putting your thumb in someone's mouth. Anyway, the scene in the high school auditorium was totally ad-libbed, and I wanted to talk about that for a second.
That's even worse.
It is a little bit worse. Now you've got the one of the premiere.
I'm going to stick my thumb in Juliet Lewis's mouth. Watch this.
One of the most revered method actors of our day, Robert De Niro, who, you know, envelops himself into a character so much that he becomes that person for weeks while filming, right? And then you got Juliette Lewis, who's relatively new, still very young, just came off of Christmas
Vacation.
She's 17
here, by the way.
Yeah.
And
17
and
playing 15.
Yeah.
And he is 47.
Yeah. He's old, like us. And so he and so him doing that and her reacting the way she does, I was both horrified to find out it was improv, but also really impressed with her acting. And she was nominated for Best Supporting Actress in this. She didn't win, but she was nominated. And I kind of feel like it was deserved. I think she was really, really good. But part of me says, yeah, but it was really gross and creepy and freaking weird. And he won, didn't he? He got nominated too. I don't remember if he won.
They were both nominated for Golden Globes and Academy Awards, and neither one of them won for either.
All right.
But you know what you forgot to mention?
What?
The most important award they were nominated for. 1992 MTV's Kiss.
Best on-screen couple?
Best on-screen
Best Kiss.
Kiss?
Really?
They were both nominated, did not win.
Oh, well, I'm sure glad they didn't freaking win MTV. Jeez. Jeez Louise. But anyway, that idea is just, it's impressive and then kind of horrifying. Like, I just, if they're improvising that, and he's like, I'm going to put my thumb in your... Like, did they not know they were going to do that? And if they didn't... Okay, so this is where Scott's neurosis comes in. So I just want to share this real quick. if De Niro came into there not knowing what he's going to do, because he's just going to improv in the moment as the character might, and she's going to react accordingly, does he know ahead of time he's going to jam his thumb in her mouth? And if he does, did he clean it, or did he? Or
I'm
was
sure
this?
He did.
Did he
there
just?
Was, there wasn't even a. There was not even a question in my mind this week of what grossed out Scott.
Oh yeah, I was thinking we play for second place. Yeah.
Right, okay, here we go. Yeah.
It's
right.
Totally first place, and second place may surprise you. I do have a second place. That's funny you bring that up, but you know what I mean. Like, do you prepare? Like, I'm just talking about the practicality. You're filming a thing, and a middle-aged man puts his thumb in your mouth. Are you going, please tell me you didn't pee half an hour ago and forget to wash your hands? Or
I would think that, while the rest of the scene may have been ad-libbed, I think that he probably prepared her for that. It's like, he'd have to.
He'd
say,
have to. There's no way he could do this.
Otherwise, you'd get that first take where she's like, what are you doing? Yeah. Why does that taste like motor oil and soup?
Oh, it's like filming Christmas Vacation all over again. Oh, I've said too much.
I remember when Chevy Chase did the same thing.
The cameras weren't even rolling then. This is weird. I just wanted to make that point because I just find that fascinating from a kind of director, like letting them go and do and be these characters. And at the same time, I'm like, how do you not plan ahead for that? So maybe Ibbot's right. Maybe that was like by the way, I'm about to stick my finger up
my finger in your mouth. Just go with it.
Yeah, just go
that was not the only example of that in this movie. And the one that kept coming back to me as I was thinking about it was Nick Nolte and Jessica Lange beating the snot out of each other.
Oh, right. Yeah.
How did they arrange that? It looked so real. I mean, there were some serious punches thrown. Mm-hmm. They really genuinely hit each other.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I went back and watched that sequence. And I'm like, man.
Well, he was defending himself.
They were
mad
at each other.
I don't think he wasn't hitting her, though. This was all him trying to stop her, wasn't he?
Go back and watch the scene. He hits her so hard. I'm just like, how did they do this? Oh, what is this?
Yeah. Well, she said, look, I can take anything. She's like, I can take anything. I've been in a giant monkey's hand before. It's fine. I can take whatever you throw at me.
No, Scott, there was another scene, and I don't have a teenage daughter yet. And so I'm like, hey, would Nick Nolte be standing around talking to his 16-year-old Juliette Lewis daughter in her panties and shirt like that? So comfortably, just casually?
Right.
I mean, he did say, hey, you're not a little kid anymore. Like, but no
as,
way.
As a teenager, I never would have sat in my room like that, Tina was saying. So, that's a little weird.
Of course you freaking wouldn't. If my kids, listen, when the kids are little, when the girls are 4 or 5, they're not running around the house in their panties and their shirts off or something. You're like, no, put some clothes on. You're a kid. Don't do that.
There's also a bad home life going on there. I mean, there's two people clearly unhappy.
Yeah.
Right.
Unhappy together for the most part.
Again, when Nick Nolte has to perform he's acting, but when he has to grab her and shake her and scream at her, I'm just like, as soon as they yell cut, I would just be so apologetic.
Right. I feel like Scorsese has the kind of professional heft when he's on set. That everybody is willing to do whatever it takes to blow something out. Like, I feel like they'll just go all the extra lengths. And I think that's thumb in the mouth. I think that's punching Nolte. I think that's Nolte punching her. I think that's what you get. And I think it's why everyone, when you think of De Niro and his most explosive performances, they're always under the tutelage Scorsese behind the camera, because that's where he's can find that stuff or whatever. So I think
he can dig that out of De Niro for sure.
Yeah. And I think others find it too. So I think what we're talking about is the Scorsese effect, if there is such a thing. Mm-hmm. And which is so interesting because he's this little menschish little Jewish man normally. Like when you hear him in interviews, like, yeah, he's thinking about getting a bagel and whatever.
he's from Queens. He wears the oversized glasses.
Yeah.
Right.
He does like
De Niro off.
And it's not just De Niro. Like he's gotten Leonardo DiCaprio's best performances out of him.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. No, it's true. You could argue that's his great strength is getting actors to find this thing and blow it out. And it's, but just the fact that it's coming from this otherwise very nice little friendly cordial man is always interesting to me because their vision is often nothing like what they are in person. You know, I don't know. Yeah. He's utterly fascinating to me, like as a filmmaker and.
And Scott, what's your favorite Scorsese film? You said you haven't seen a couple of them, but which is the best?
I think I'm with you on Gangs of New York, but I also really liked Goodfellas. Goodfellas, by the way, was the movie you made right before this, which is crazy. It's only a year before. But I think Goodfellas is probably right up there. And
doesn't Goodfellas seem so much better on technique? This film seems like a step down.
Oh, totally, absolutely.
From Goodfellas.
Yeah. It's very. This has a formula.
It's Goodfellas. Very jagged edited compared to the smoothness I think of Goodfellas.
Yeah.
And Casino.
Yeah. And everybody wants to constantly shower Tarantino with changing cinema forever and all this stuff. I feel like Tarantino just took a card from the deck of Scorsese in a lot of ways.
Well, it's about iteration, right? Yeah. So I remember going to see my first couple of Tarantino films and just being so impressed that he had added to what filmmakers do.
Yeah, it's not to take away from him at all. But
it wasn't upside down or something. No. It wasn't weird. It was just so much more that Tarantino was
part of what I liked about Jackie Brown is it felt like a departure for him. And I kind of liked that because it wasn't just another Pulp Fiction kind of movie. It was something a little bit different and a little bit separate from that. Also had De Niro in it, but
we've talked about this. We can't really do Tarantino movies for FilmSack because they're just so mad and violent and so on. But I have an idea for a supercut someone could make for us that we could do for FilmSack, and that is a supercut of all of Tarantino's diner scenes.
Yeah.
I think would be really interesting and fun to talk about.
Yeah. I mean, that's where he's strong is that dialogue and that kind of weird tense, whatever. But I don't know. I just feel like there's going to come a day where everybody's looking back on all the great filmmakers of the 20th and 21st century. And Scorsese's going to be way up there, dude.
Yeah. Already.
He's going to be, he's already there. Yeah. And he's just this nice little guy. I just want to have a pickle with him or something. He just seems so nice.
And then you'll stick it in your mouth.
Yeah, I'll put it in my mouth and rub it around and go, this is interesting. All right. It is also, I already said it was his most highest grossing thing. When Katie strangles, I already told you that, Spielberg and the whole thing. Okay, never mind. We're skipping ahead now. All right. So both of them lost a ton of weight for this role.
Yep.
And I loved that they put in, but they also had in this film the two original actors, Gregory Peck and the other guy.
Mitchum.
Robert Mitchum.
Peck's last performance, Mitchum. Too, right?
Gregory Peck's last movie, yep. That is correct.
Tons of preparation, especially around De Niro. De Niro got actual tattoos with disappearing ink. He paid thousands of dollars to dentists to ruin his teeth and then fix them back after the movie.
Yep.
Like, it just goes on and on.
Dude's into it. He's into it, man. That guy.
Yeah.
He put on these, so his tattoos are supposed to be made of vegetable ink or something?
Right, yeah. Yeah. Disappearing ink is made of, like, food, basically. Yeah.
And it takes weeks.
Your body digests it slowly and disappears.
So Loretta is made of broccoli.
That's weird.
Exactly.
Well, he was ripped, though, man. I'll tell you.
Oh, jeez.
For 47, my gosh, that guy was, he was looking good.
Yeah, he let it, and I think Nick Nolte looked pretty good. I think, you know, those guys clearly wanted to do this. This is also the height
horrible
of the
wardrobe choices, but they look great.
I'm a huge fan of Nick Nolte, but I'm more of a fan of him now than I was then. I like him grizzled and cranky and like if you've
maybe
seen
a little off the edge.
Yeah, a little off the edge. Like Warrior is an amazing performance by him. Tom Hardy movie about UFC fighters.
About his Beverly Hills Bum thing? What was that? Wasn't that him and Ted?
Yeah.
Down and Out in Beverly Hills.
That is it.
Yeah.
You know what I only remember about that Ibbot is the
mugshot that came out right after that.
No. It's the "This is not my beautiful house. This is not." It's that song, the Talking Heads song.
Yeah. Oh, the Talking Heads.
Yeah.
Did they use that in that?
Big time. Yeah. It's the only memory I have of it. Honestly, I don't remember anything else. Down and Out.
Speaking of the movies and the music, I was a little bit disturbed that Juliette Lewis was listening to GNR on the radio, but then she had MTV turned on with Jane's Addiction.
Jane's Addiction. Why wouldn't you listen to Been Caught Stealing? Exactly.
Yeah. I was like, why wouldn't you just turn that on? Been Caught Stealing is way better. Well, not way better, but at least it would be coherent.
Well, isn't Jane, but was wasn't the video, see, okay, help me with this confusion. The video looked like the Been Caught Stealing video.
It was.
But the music wasn't.
But the music was GNR.
Right. She had GNR playing on her stereo while she was watching MTV with the sound off.
So I'm curious if they couldn't secure the rights to Jane's Addiction song or something.
And well, they just gave him the rights to show the video, but not the,
yeah.
not the audio.
Yeah.
It does seem odd.
You know, Perry Farrell, you never know what he's going to give you. He's kind of a weirdo.
You don't have to have the rights to show like clips from the video, right? But you would have to have the rights to play the music.
Oh, maybe.
You've heard his great environmental speech, right?
I'm glad you're bringing this up.
Yeah. His answer to why we shouldn't pollute the oceans was, how would you like it if I came over to your house and took a dump in your tub? That was his answer.
Just be sure to flush the tub.
Yeah, that was pretty awesome of him. Perry Farrell, keep on keeping on.
Yes. Speaking of oceans, this film is supposed to take place in Wilmington, North Carolina.
Yeah.
Right. And these guys are supposed to, when they finally flee their house and leave a couple of dead bodies there, they're supposed to flee down to a recreational area on the Cape Fear River. They never once went to North Carolina to film the movie. The whole thing is made in Florida, in Hollywood, and there's one exterior shot of Wilmington. It's supposed to be Wilmington. It's actually Savannah, Georgia.
Yeah. None of this surprises me.
Are you complaining that they didn't film a movie exactly in the place that they told you it was taking place?
It's because of the accents.
Can I introduce you to Toronto?
No, I'm just saying. No, Vancouver.
Yeah. Or Vancouver. Sorry.
Yeah, Vancouver is every city. But I'm just like, it's because of the accents. When you look around and you see the decor and when they're outside and so on, like, no wonder they didn't get the voices right. They weren't even there. Yeah. They didn't even they didn't hire extras and hear how they talk.
They didn't even hire the extras who beat up De Niro from North Carolina.
That's true.
Hey, did you guys live in a high school? Did you have a high school where the only way you could get to the stage where you would do plays and stuff was to go through what looked like a scene in Aliens or something? Like, what the hell?
I didn't understand why that would be where the
secret tunnels underneath the school to get to the auditorium.
Auditoriums are usually central and easy to get to, and there's no boiler room.
They also serve as the cafeteria, the general meeting space for all students. It's a huge cavernous thing that it has 1,000 doors in and out.
Scorsese must have really been out of high school for a really long time, because none of that made any sense. I've never had a teacher call me and go, "Hey, I'm the new teacher, and we're gonna meet tomorrow in the basement, in the death hole."
Everything about that. I understand that she is a 15-year-old branching into life, trying to understand life, whatever. But that made her seem like the dumbest kid in that school. The fact that she just fell for
everything in the movie.
And I guess that's what you were trying to do, right? We were supposed to be sympathizing some way or another with Nick Nolte's character, yet he couldn't keep his family together and everything was just out of his control.
I guess so.
Is that what we're supposed to be
feeling? But here's the thing. Clear this up for me. At the end where we get her final bit of her speech about her time on Cape Fear that summer,
her
eyes get all red and x-ray looking and stuff. Is that supposed to be a throwback to the 60s thing? Probably. I don't know.
Yes, Hitchcock. That was kind of like this Hitchcock.
But also, is it saying, now because of this experience, the next generation of psychopath has been born?
Scorsese tips his hand on that in the documentary. He actually says that there is a thing about evil, that it begets evil.
So are they implying that that's when she went on to Natural Born Killers? Is that
that's when she became Mallory? Yeah. Let's actually, since you brought that up, let's talk about, because they do a lot of weird video tricks like that. You wake up from a dream and the only thing you can see is the negative image stuff. Right. Or the fact that when fireworks apparently are going off outside, your vision is completely red and then completely yellow and then completely green.
Right.
But then when there's a gunshot inside, you're like, where was that?
Yeah.
Sorry. Go ahead.
A good point. Like that technique, I think it's either ripped from that 60s thing or he was wrong-headed about using it. So it must have been.
Mm-hmm.
Was that a common...
Oh, it's very Hitchcockian with the rear window flashbulb thing that... that George Bailey does at the end when he's fending off Raymond Burr. He does the flashbulb and it's like completely blinding for a minute, and then stuff starts to get into focus. That was probably an homage to that.
I love the idea of George Bailey and Raymond Burr fighting. I know that's what it is.
Hello, Raymond Burr.
I'll take you to the moon. That's amazing. That's really great. There
were a lot of dumb people making dumb arrangements in this movie, but the ultimate for me was De Niro getting his attorney out from under him and reversing the restraining order. Mm-hmm. Everybody involved in that is so stupid that they fell for it. I don't know.
Dumb Gregory judge, Peck.
Gregory Peck was amazing, though. I mean, you.
Sure. I love Gregory Peck. I love.
I would have been.
He blew it out of the water.
I love both.
Yeah, Gregory
guys.
Peck should have been offended when he read the script. Like, wait, fall for this?
I mean, he made the first movie. You know, like that. Sure. He's your Nick Nolte from the first movie, and Robert Mitchum is the other guy. And so this is that. This is a stunt, like. Those two are venerable, casting amazing stunt, actors, but it's a casting stunt, you know? It's like, well, hey, right. What do you guys want? Do you want to make a little extra money? And according to the trivia, Gregory Peck never saw the first one or this one. He just didn't watch his own movies. Wow. So he doesn't even know what he's in, really.
I don't like to smell my own poop. I like to lay it and leave it.
Let's also bring up Ileana Douglas, who I usually really, really like. But
yeah,
obviously in this one, she was, I think there, you know, it's kind of a chick in the bucket because she could identify Max Cady and say, police, this man attacked me, broke my arm, hit me, raped me, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Hate my face.
And that would have been enough. That would have been enough to end this movie right in the middle.
Yeah. No, you're right.
Well, but she's, you know, of course, they played that. They said she wouldn't do it. And that was a big problem during the 90s, trying to convince women to come forward for those kinds of things, and
still a problem
even
now,
more so for her character, because she worked in that field of laughing at people when they would come in and have to expose themselves entirely to.
Yeah. She just struck me as I was nervous every time she was on, and it's because they portrayed the character to be kind of crazy, and it made me uncomfortable. I didn't like it.
I wonder if Ibbot is saying there were one too many times that we had to explain away him getting away with things.
Yeah,
right.
Like
that
was it. Like,
yeah.
Ileana Douglas's character is an attorney. She would have, or she wants to be an attorney. She works for an attorney. Someone connected to her would have rained fire down on this guy, and they would have, you know, there would have been an APB out, and they would have picked him up quickly. You know?
Yeah. Plus, hospitals and doctors are not allowed to have you say, "Oh, I fell down some steps," when they know clearly that none of that happened. They are by law required to report it. They can't just say, "Oh, well, she fell down some steps. I guess we're done. Moving on to the next."
Must have been what happened. Yeah. That looks like appropriate damage for falling down steps.
If the movie has a big park your brain at the door moment, it's probably that.
Yeah. Right, and it would have been more interesting to me for him to have developed some reason to keep her silent. Like, if she had suffered his horrible rape and abuse, and then basically said, "Here's why I'm not going to talk," and just laid there and looked pleadingly at Nick Nolte, I think it would have been like any flimsy excuse other than the mastermind criminal is just counting on her to not talk. I don't know.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. And one last bit on her, debauchery is actually a four-letter word.
Oh my God, four-syllable word. She four says three-syllable word. Yeah. What? Yeah. Why?
Debauchery.
We start calculating. Remember my hands going, debauchery. No, it's not.
Debauchery.
My fingers out, counting. One, two, three.
Debauchery.
debauchery.
Hey, by the way, don't forget he was in this.
I don't give a shit.
We had Fred Thompson.
Yeah.
Fred Thompson back in it, ball up in there. Didn't have much of a role.
Same cloth as Joe Don Baker, I think.
Oh yeah, sometimes I confuse them. Or I think especially about him. I'll think about a movie and go, "Oh yeah, he was in a thing," and then I go, "No, that was Joe Don Baker or whatever."
Yeah.
But very, I like both. Are they both? They're not both dead, are they? Is Joe Don Baker dead?
Yes.
Oh.
Well, I know Fred Thompson is.
Well, I know that. Yeah, but Joe Don Baker, hold on.
Joe Don Baker, He's still alive.
He is most recently in. Oh, he was in Mud. He was great.
Yeah,
in Mud.
He's.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, Mud is so good, you guys. What a great movie.
Is he? Is he going around the country sizing up people's hands for guns? Is that? No, wait a minute. That's the other guy's name.
Did you know that Fred Thompson's last three films were all his sign-off, "I am a big believer in Jesus" movies? He made three consecutive movies called A Larger Life, 90 Minutes in Heaven, and God's Not Dead 2.
Oh, boy.
Just like, it was like he knew the end was coming and he wanted to make a message.
Well, when did he? So he ran for president in 08, was it? Or was it 2012 he ran? Someone remind me.
I don't remember that at all. Interesting.
2012.
2012, was it? Okay. So imagine that guy. He died when?
2015.
Okay. So he would have died during his term if he would have won an eight term.
Correct.
8 year term.
Maybe. Yeah. Maybe. Or they would have got him some help.
Well, yeah. Maybe. They were otherwise what, they have like supernatural powers to stop heart attacks, or what do you
Well, I mean, they might make him, you know, go do a little presidential run or something, make him stop eating bacon. He might have went into like a bacon spiral after he lost the election. That, you know, hastened his death.
A little like Al Gore seemed to do something like that. He got all fat and hairy. Yeah, maybe.
Now, so Robert Mitchum is another great older actor that was in this movie. And I'm looking at his IMDb database right now, and his description is very flattering. Robert Mitchum was an underrated American leading man of enormous ability.
I do not say underrated. I think he was absolutely rated, and he's awesome. I don't think he's overrated. I think he's great. Voice. I love Robert Mitchum. Are you kidding?
His voice.
Best part.
So I stand corrected. It's just time is passing, and Fred Thompson ran for president in 2008.
Oh, okay. It was a wait. Okay.
All right. He never gained enough traction to be considered a front runner.
So he could have gotten. He may have had a better chance today. I'm just saying. but so Robert Mitchum, I got to play this. He is, let's see, I'm going to put that. One of my favorite things in Tombstone is the intro. Mm-hmm. And he narrates the intro. It's one of the last things he did. And I freaking love it. So I want to play just a piece of it. I don't know how loud this will be.
1879. The Civil War is over, and the resulting economic explosion spurs the Great Migration West.
Oh, I just love it. And then finally is done, it pans out to be this big.
It's an old-timey, highly processed black and white.
Yeah.
That's in a like a square format mm-hmm. or something, mm-hmm. and then they pull back to full film.
Yeah.
In color,
it's cool. Oh, it's really cool, mm-hmm. and it's like he had so many that's westerns cool. and was so well known for his westerns. It was just the perfect way to start that thing. So good.
Let's give a piece of trivia on
Robert Mitchum's IMDb page. Mm-hmm. All of the faucets in his house only had whiskey. There was no water coming out of any of the faucets in Robert Mitchum's house.
That is some bullshit.
I like the tale that the whoever is spinning over here on the IMDb.
I don't buy that at all. That seems.
No, I might have fabricated. Okay, that one. I might be writing that in his trivia myself.
You might be typing that as you say it. Okay.
I might be typing it as I speak.
This Randy, might be my favorite bio.
Randy, what were you saying? You were saying something.
I want to give Scorsese credit for doing some of the same stuff we're talking about with the Tombstone intro. Mm. There are several different shots in this film where you're looking at somebody in one place, and then you're cleverly edited to be looking at them in another place. Mm-hmm. And the scene starts from there. Mm. And it's very good. It's not, you know, cheesy. You never feel like disjointed or anything. And I really appreciated that. It's so weird to me that this film has these horrible filter shots. And by the way, there's early in the movie, there's a bathroom mirror process shot that is as not held up at all. I don't know if you noticed.
That's the
it.
One where he keeps looking back and forth at Jessica Lange, right? Is that which one you're talking about?
The two of them are in the bathroom.
Yeah.
And the whole thing is done with mirrors, and I don't even know. I don't know how it's processed so badly. It looks
and it
like
ends
maybe
in sex.
Maybe there was a green screen behind one of the mirrors. I don't know. It's really weird. Hard to explain. I want to go see how they made it, because it doesn't look good.
It's
go watch that. If you haven't watched the movie yet, watch this first scene in the bathroom. It doesn't look good at all.
It's funny. Yeah. I didn't really notice the bad processing. I was really fascinated. I was still trying to figure out what Scorsese's filming language was at that point. I was really interested in how he was flipping the scenes and placing actors in the scenes and stuff. I didn't notice it. Yeah. I'll go back and take a look.
Yeah, it's be worth seeing. So my favorite scene is easily him hanging upside down on the phone. I think that's awesome.
Oh my goodness, that was so good.
Crazy hair.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And him doing pull-ups between conversation and there's something about, I don't know, De Niro, that guy, he can eat up the scene. For, you know, take Meet the Fockers out of the
and Dirty Grandpa, for which he's nominated for a a Razzie Award this year.
Is he this year? Good. Yeah. He should be be called out when he does bullshit like that. But then again, that that intern movie he did with Big Eyes, what's her name? Yeah, that's a really, really good movie. Like,
it is really good.
It shouldn't be.
And it's I think it's because he's subtle in The Intern. He's he's just supposed to be as quiet and unassuming as possible. Right. And he actually is able to do that now.
Yeah. He's just, I don't know. That guy is just amazing, I think. So, grossest part, you guys got the first one, thumb in the mouth, too obvious. Right, what do you think the runner-up is?
On the second one is the aforementioned Pepto-Bismol and whiskey cocktail.
No, but it's up there. I put that at third, but there's a second that I'd put higher than that.
Right.
Any other guesses?
Yeah, interesting.
Any other
sweaty
guesses?
Sweaty Ileana Douglas.
No, she's all right, sweaty. They right. both, they both, you know, whatever, racquetball, it'll take it out of you. I get it.
Yeah.
Any other guesses? Although it is kind of gross to be all sweaty like that. But
yeah, there's a lot of times I'm uncomfortable in this movie, and
easy. It seems tough, but here's the answer. There is a scene after everything's all said and done. He's out there sinking. Yelling in tongues or whatever,
and
that was yelling in tongues. It's like he was drowning. I couldn't figure out is he drowning?
Or is that tongues? Yeah.
Or is he?
It's supposed to be tongues.
Speaking in tongues.
Yeah.
Is it just the family in the mud? Is that your?
You. It's her waking up with a with her face.
Oh.
And her mouth in with mud in her mouth. Oh my gosh, dude!
Mud mouth. Yeah. Jessica Lange could not have looked more confused.
And not going, puh, puh. And that'd be the first thing I do.
The very first thing I do. And for the next week, all your egg salad's going to sound like the shells got left in. Just crunching it in your teeth. So that's easily number two. Thumb in the mouth, dirt in the mouth, and then Pepto whiskey combo. Those are the top three. All right. I believe it is in our duty to give some people some clips from this film.
Oh my goodness! Yes,
I have a number of them.
There's some duty.
There's some duty for sure. I'm gonna play them, and I got this short one here. I don't remember what this is, so here it is.
What about your books? Already read them.
Already read them. Oh, that was
I was in love with this movie from from that moment forward.
Oh yeah, especially when you're seeing as well, and you guys send screenshots of this, but the all the like Mussolini and Jesus and all this stuff on his wall, and then Black Bolt and Captain Marvel.
I wondered about that. Is there any meaning to that? There must be.
I can't think of any.
Captain Marvel had some instances of where he was kind of on the outside of the law, and I couldn't quite.
Yeah, what's Black Bolt like?
Black Bolt, leader of the Inhumans. Yeah.
I couldn't quite put it into
destroys people whenever he speaks. I don't know.
Very
odd. If anybody knows, send
I
it
feel
in.
Like they were like, we got this blank wall to fill up. Somebody grab something.
Yeah,
all right.
Maybe not everything has a true purpose.
Maybe that's where he started his reading. Maybe he started with comics and then he moved up to to.
And I can't help but feel like that. Whatever issue he chopped up is. Would probably have been worth enough to pay all of his legal fees.
Why? His mom died and left him the farm. I was like, farm.
And don't forget, 30 grand 25 years ago was more like 100 grand now.
That's
what kind of farm did they have? A weed farm? I mean,
weed.
We have grandma.
Well, they had a little weed there. That's how I had some at the school.
You know, the basis of this film is that somebody who is evil and has a little money can get away with murder.
That's the lesson.
All you need to do is have money to spend.
You can be. That's all I'll say about that. All right, here is a. I don't know what this is. Somebody sneakily taped Brian Ibbett's last visit to a movie theater, and this is how it went down.
Excuse me.
I would throw my popcorn, my drink, my everything.
Everything, that's awful. Dude, that's the worst fake laugh ever.
All right, something about suing somebody.
I like hanging out with you, so sue me.
She drove me nuts. I'm just gonna say
that racquetball relationship was weird. Their
it was an abusive.
Their violence towards one another was that like their sexual frustration? I couldn't quite.
The RBR. So racquetball relationship.
So I played racquetball competitively for 20 years, and I And I still think of myself as a pretty good racquetball player. And when I was much, much, much younger, there were times when with a buddy where we were both feeling like aggressive and stuff, we would say, let's play no hinders for a while. And you push each other around.
Right.
And it's, you know, it, you get tired of it really fast. They were portrayed as playing no hinder racquetball in a way that would never happen in reality, because the man would just deck the woman. Like you just run over her and you don't have a partner anymore.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, there was some real sweat expended on that. That I know. All right, here's De Niro's voice.
Free as a bird, apparently. You go everywhere you want with whomever. That much freedom could maybe get a fellow into trouble. What do you think?
I'd like my keys.
Please give me my keys.
Yes, I would like my keys now, please.
This is the Nick Nolte that I love.
I want you the hell off my property!
I like that one. I like the angry, high-pitched, yelling Nolte. I'm a fan of that.
Yelling Nolte.
Yeah. Here's, and when he does it now, he almost has a kind of broken throat sound to him when he yells now, and it's, I find it intoxicating. There's something about that guy. I don't know what it is. Something as he's gotten older.
Wouldn't
just
kick him out of the theater for smoking and cackling.
I wouldn't. Not Nick Nolte. Mm-hmm. Not at this age. All right, here's, you guys try to tell me what he says here. Well, I know what he says, but it's wrong. So here is, he's saying it wrong.
What is the formula for compensation, sir?
What is the formula?
The formula. Yeah.
What is the formula for compensation?
It says formula.
It's one of those moments I'm talking about where they had decided to do Southern accents, and he remembers in the middle of saying the line that he needs to say it like that.
Yeah. I kind of felt that way.
I do this in an accent, don't I?
What is the formula?
Formula.
Old school doctor. So here's that.
Trouble is, poisoning a dog is just a fine. But if he's unemployed, you got to have money. Or we'll bust him for vagrancy. We'll give him a full body strip search. Jerk a knot in his tit.
Okay, hold on. That last bit.
Yeah.
Jerk a knot in his tit, I think. So I'm going to play it again. I have it isolated.
Whoa. Jerk a knot in his tit.
One more time.
Jerk a knot in his tit.
I think they made Robert Mitchum say jerk a knot in his tit.
I think
jerk
they did.
Not in his tit. I've never heard that. Is that a phrase?
I think play it again tit, from right? a little earlier so I can work up to it. I'm not sure.
Here's the whole thing.
Trouble is, they have money, or we'll bust them for vagrancy. We'll give them a full body strip search. Jerk a knot in his tit.
Jerk a knot in his tit.
Tail. Yeah,
that apparently is a phrase. When I did jerk a knot in his, it Google finished it tail.
Oh, a tail?
It doesn't. His tail.
I prefer tit because he took his shirt off.
Yeah, it doesn't work though. He just said a full body search, well, may as well refer to something naked that actually is on a person.
Mm-hmm. Jerk a knot.
I love how old school cop
jerk a knot in his tail.
Jerk a knot. It's like
okay. All right.
I could listen to Robert Mitchum forever. Do we have any other quotes from him? Because please.
Yeah. Here you go. Here's one.
I don't know whether to look at him or read him.
There you go.
Yeah. Love them.
Same thing, Mitchum.
All right, this
I don't know.
You won't. I should read
blankly.
Him, or you won't. I should look at him.
Yeah, I bet but, you better look at him and read him, there, Phil.
But having said that, both. Right? Mitchum's accent is not a classic Carolina accent by any stretch, right? This is more like Wyoming.
It's a classic Mitchum accent. Like it's something Mitchum exactly. does. I freaking love his.
Mitchum gets a pass.
He always gets a pass in my book. That guy's great. All right, here. This happens a lot, is what I wrote. I don't know what I meant.
I'd still like to kill him.
Oh, that's what I meant. I just meant that music kicks off all
those
the time.
Those were such loud moments, man. I mean, just like overriding everything.
And they're always just whispering like they go, and then he walked into the room. And wasn't that a rework? That was a rework of the original music, right? Dunaway, you were looking this up.
Right. Yeah, it was a rework of the original music. And that was typical of those times that music would just all of a sudden blare at you like that.
Yeah.
It was a throwback. I don't know if it was appropriate, but it was certainly a throwback.
Here's a line I liked.
Well, pardon me, all over the place.
There's some Robert Mitchum seventh grader talk for you. Pardon yeah, me I, all over the place.
Hmm. I looked and looked for the music. It's an uncredited composer. I'm kind of confused. Yeah.
I thought it was Elmer Bernard Bernstein.
Herman. Oh yeah, Elmer Bernstein, right.
Herman.
I thought it was.
I watched the credits a couple times looking for it. I don't know. I couldn't find it.
It's got to be in there somewhere.
Not on IMDb.
Look at the old
it's
movies.
It's not on IMDb.
See if Wikipedia.
Maybe they just straight up use the old music. Maybe that was the deal.
You'd think they'd credit that.
You'd think.
They did. I don't know. It was a reworking of it. According to Wikipedia, there's some, let me see. But I don't know if it's listed
well,
as far
pardon
as.
Pardon me, all over the place.
All right. Jeez Louise. Okay, here's a parent fight. This is the one you were talking about with all the punching, Randy. So I'm going to play it so you can hear it.
Oh, please, please. Son of a bitch. You're a son of a bitch. Now you cut it. You son of a bitch. Stop it.
That's a lot of turkey slapping right there.
It's a lot funnier in audio.
I think they just stood between some microphones and went at it. I don't think that was a turkey at all.
Yeah. I think they did too, but hearing it.
I think the only turkey getting slapped was Nick Nolte.
Yeah. I think that, but hearing it and not seeing it is funnier than seeing it. Yeah. There's something about that audio. It's pretty funny.
So Bernard Herrmann died like 20 years before this movie.
Right.
I'm guessing they just reused the score from the first film.
Yeah, they probably did it. I mean, they had to do some arranging and stuff, but yeah, I think so.
But that's all you need, right? Mm-hmm. You're remaking a film. Why not use the music?
Especially if you're Scorsese and you're paying homage to a thing you love, and you know you're tweaking it in lots of ways. But maybe one way to keep it, you know, true or whatever is to use the music. Yeah. I definitely got the feeling that was on purpose. Like there was definitely a feeling of like, oh, this isn't just them unironically using a really intense score. This is them pulling from something else, and I couldn't put my finger on it, but I think that's it. Here's an argument I wrote down. Oh, it must be them again arguing.
Because I ain't your porch baby, buddy.
Well, gee golly gosh, I sure am sorry I offended you, you white trash piece of shit.
Whoa, Joe Don Baker.
Oh,
it's funny how often white trash. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It was like the worst insult you could give somebody, like, just beat you up with a bunch of pipes, you white trash piece of shit.
Yeah. The problem I've always had with the term white trash is it is a response to it's almost racist in itself, and I don't mean against white people. It feels compoundedly racist against people of color because it came up as a reaction to negative stereotypes towards black people. So then they needed a term that was the same level of derogatory comment and also aimed in the same way, but toward white people. So it's basically tantamount to saying you're like the black people that we always have a bad name for, but we have one for you now that's called white trash. That's why it's always bugged
me. It's definitely a classist remark, and it evolved into trailer trash, of course.
Yeah.
But I love the Louis C.K. take on it. That's like, this is the least effective curse ever. You're reminding me of a time when my ancestors had land and people. Wow, that's horrible.
Here's, what's this? Oh, I just like the way she says it.
You can't smoke grass in school.
I just something about that. You can't smoke grass. Are we still calling it grass in 1991?
Grass.
Yes.
Okay. She was.
You can't smoke grass.
Okay, fine.
I remember the D.A.R.E. program coming to my high school in 1991.
All right.
Did you get a shirt?
No.
Come on, man. Grass. Everybody had a black shirt with D.A.R.E.
Well, still do D.A.R.E. stuff. They had D.A.R.E. stuff when I was there. I think they do it now. My point is, I don't think anybody's been calling it grass since like 75 or something.
Right.
Like grass? It's weed. You got to call it weed.
Well, Martin Scorsese
grass for a little while.
Yeah.
Martin Scorsese still calls it grass.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
All right. He gets to call it whatever he wants. All right.
Give me a bagel. Skip the grass.
Ibbot, you're a music expert. I'm going to ask you a question. What do you think Robert De Niro's favorite 1980s, early 90s era girl performer was? This seems like an odd question. Mm-hmm. And I have an answer for you if you don't know.
I caught this.
I don't know where you're going with this. So
I did.
I'll play it and you can
share. This is during the grass scene.
All right. So this is, it's in the same scene. Here it is.
I think we're alone now.
Oh, come on.
He's totally right.
He's totally singing the Tommy James and the Shondells version.
Oh, yes.
Tiffany cover.
Oh, that could be.
I'm going to disagree. I think he was trying to think he was trying to impress her with his popular culture knowledge.
Well, I'm hip. I watch the MTVs.
I'll admit, I forgot that was a cover. I thought Tiffany did that herself. So you're probably right. He's an older dude.
I think we're alone now.
Oh my Lord.
I'll bet you could do an entire episode
inside your mouth.
you could do a whole episode of Coverville on just this one song. There's many covers.
Probably has. Yeah. Or if you haven't, you will, because that's what happens over on Coverville at coverville.com. Check it out weekly.
Thank you. My favorite. Ask me what my favorite is when I say something like that. Come on.
I think we're alone now.
That's your favorite.
Oh, never mind. I have a new favorite. There it is.
Doesn't seem to be.
What is your favorite? Do you have a favorite cover of that song?
Weird Al Yankovic. I think I'm a clone now. It's really good.
Oh, yeah. That one is good. I like that.
Not a cover. It's a parody.
I know. Snap. All dropping.
Damn, son. Boom. All right. Here's what's this? Oh, more old guys.
King Solomon could not have adjudicated more wisely your honor. I am so offended by the Philistine tactics, Mr. Bowden. I petition the ABA for his disbarment.
Good Lord, Gregory Peck.
Philistine? Philistine?
I think he meant Philistine, but he said Philistine.
Yeah. I will accept it.
Okay.
Gregory Peck.
Right, if Mitchum 100. Gets a pass, then so does Peck. Peck gets a pass, too.
Those guys always get a pass.
He does sound like the kind of person who would say he's going to a Mexican restaurant.
Mexican. Right. Here's some, what? Oh, let's go do this.
Later on, we go out to woods and shoot some trees.
All right, Joe Don Baker, let's go shoot some trees.
What the hell?
What a weird thing to do, but okay. Yeah. I love how he backpedals in that whole scene. He's like, we'll go out and shoot some trees. No, wait a minute now. Let me see your hands. I'm not giving you a gun, and you might be shooting people.
Right. That was odd. He made a real turn, real right turn in the middle of that conversation.
I know a guy.
I wrote pretty tempting here. Let's see what that meant.
That's going to be tempting to him as shit is to a fly.
Oh, all right. That's another old saying. A lot of old Southern sayings.
How does he know this? The whole time I'm just like, oh, this scheme isn't going to work at all.
He does seem like the worst possible private investigator, honestly. I mean, I think his heart's in the right place. Don't get me wrong. But fishing line, a bear, whiskey and Pepto, like... He's a bad detective.
He did it with a
but he wants to
wig
be the man's man, right?
Right. I get it. All right.
I liked him. I would have hired him. Mm-hmm.
This is
that
right
was the idea. You were supposed to feel secure with him, but not so much.
I liked him, but
you'll just end up in the kitchen slipping on his blood.
I would have hired him right up until the point where he hires three guys who can't beat up one guy, and they're all armed with pipes.
Yeah, and
that's
and,
where I would have started doubting Joe Don Baker.
Yeah, and bicycle chains. Now, can I just say something? I didn't know that bicycle chain was a thing. Is that a thing to beat people with? I didn't know that.
Oh yeah,
that seems awful.
See how effective it was.
It'll tear the flesh off you, man. Yeah. That's awful. And I assume they're all oily, like right off of a bike. Ugh. You getting that in your bloodstream?
I'm going to ride my bike over. I'm going to take my chain off. I'm going to beat you with it. And then I'm going to put it back on and ride back home.
That Scott's big worry is, I'm going to get all dirty getting hit with that.
No. I'm just thinking, like, if you're going to get, like, staph infections and stuff from
that'd be the worst.
Getting it in your blood.
Can we assume that you're going to play him saying, come out wherever you are?
Did I do that? I don't know.
Because I want to talk about that scene.
All right. Well, here's him talking about prison.
I learned that in prison, you like?
Ugh. Ugh. I really don't like that accent.
We brought it up and I forgot. I never even put it in my notes, but the whole how does Nick Nolte treat a crime scene is by handling the gun, handling the piano wire, slipping and smearing the blood all over the place,
and then
getting the blood all over every other surface on his way out the door.
I did like the movie. The movie kept reminding us he was a lawyer, though, because it's so easy to forget he knows anything about the law.
Exactly.
So he's like, I know I shouldn't have fled the scene. I'm a lawyer. I know that. I'm like, yeah, you're doing everything a lawyer knows not to do. You're doing it.
Right. But everybody had a hearty laugh, right? When they all slipped around in the blood.
I was laughing my head off. I laughed my head off, and I know you're not supposed to, but here's the sound of that. It was really funny. Like, he just slammed down, and then she came in to help him and slip in it too, and it was just like a Monty Python sketch. It was terrible. De Niro is what? Oh, intense, I wrote.
We are now in the mad circle, the circle of traitors. Traitors to country, traitors to fellow man, traitors to God. You, sir, are charged with betraying the principles of our faith.
It's intense. He's really into it.
Get me a rock.
Yeah. Go get a bigger rock and then miss him because.
Yeah. Who's just picking up big rocks?
Yeah.
Boy, but he could throw them though, man. He had some aim.
And that was great. I was like, no way did he just get. And there's, oh man, this movie really made me question. It's like, how much injury does Martin Scorsese think an individual can receive before they just die?
Before they shut down, yeah. Totally. Yeah. A giant rock to your head would be enough. And how many times it hits you, like, what was it, 5 or 6 times getting swiped with one of those? You'd be done.
Yeah.
And he and the way he was laying, like, I don't know if he was training by taking phone calls upside down, but he seemed to be a pretty good shot with a rock upside down. And I don't know if you guys have ever hung upside down from anything and tried to aim and throw something and hit. It doesn't work. Yeah. You can't do it.
It's horrible.
Your orientation.
I can't hang upside down and live. I will lose consciousness.
Yeah. All your blood and
I'm
stuff.
Blacking out.
Yep.
I'm blacking out just thinking about it.
Here he is speaking in tongues as the water went down.
I just kept hearing David Lee Roth going, how about a simple bibble pop?
That's amazing.
I didn't even realize he was speaking in tongues at first. At first I thought he was motorboating, like he was drowning, like he was just barely keeping his head above water. I thought he was motorboating.
That's amazing.
No, he was speaking in tongues.
I love that he was the idea that he was motorboating is really funny. And then every 5 minutes you get this. I'm gonna play this at my funeral.
Yeah.
Really intense. So I guess I didn't have that clip. The come out wherever you are. When was that? I don't remember it.
Which is funny because if you would have asked me before I watched this when that occurs in the film, I could have sworn it was in the auditorium when he's trying to call Juliette Lewis down to the little, Three Little Bears house or whatever that thing was on stage.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. When was it? I don't remember.
He says it in the houseboat.
Oh.
No.
Oh.
No, he when he gets beat up by three guys and then it turns out he has supernatural powers, for whatever stupid reason, Nick Nolte's hiding behind a dumpster watching the fun.
That's right.
And then Nick Nolte turns to run away and kicks a trash bag full of tin cans.
Apparently, he could not catch a break.
He was standing inches in front of a trash bag full of tin cans.
Yeah.
He kicks it like a football. And then he freezes like he's freaking Daffy Duck.
Yeah,
right.
And De Niro's trying to figure out where he is, and De Niro's blinded from the bloodlust and so on. Yeah.
You definitely get this feeling, and I couldn't quite fully form the idea, but you definitely get the feeling that there was a greater power at play that was trying to, you know, give Nick Nolte his comeuppance. And so every time he would. Should have escaped from a scenario is like insult to injury every time.
Yep. By the way, his wife is a bad graphic artist. I wanted to make sure I mentioned that.
Oh, yeah.
Nothing I saw on that wall or on her table looked like anything but gobbledygook. So
that's because she was usually drunk and smoking.
Yeah. A lot of smoking. Boy, 91, man. Mm-hmm. Full effect. Just smoke. Smoke them if you got
them. What kind of cigar was that? Was the biggest fat cigar I have ever seen
in my life
that De Niro was smoking. Yeah. I don't know what that is, but I think it was huge.
There's
enormous.
No Swisher Sweet, that's for sure.
No.
It was a stogie.
Mm-hmm.
All right, girl.
Mm-hmm.
That's the end of those clips. Why don't we dive directly into this then? Hot bod De Niro, check. This is the Film Sack Checklist. I bet De Niro's thumb tastes like horse anus, check. And finally, +10 to lighter fluid powers. Check. Man, the way she was squirting that at him and the way it took off and caught on fire is impressive. She was like a wizard.
Kind of totally.
Shit
wizard dame on that thing.
Yeah, not a great wizard, but she was all right.
So we didn't talk about the car being tall enough that you could cling to the bottom of it and live.
Oh. Yeah, or the fact that an entire drive like that, nobody would ever come up next to you or behind you and see the guy strapped under your car and say, you know, roll down do the motion to roll down your window so they can say, did you know there's a guy under your car?
Yeah.
Well, and I genuinely thought that's what they were giving us when they pull out of the gas station and you see him and there's a guy standing on the side of the road looking at him. I thought the guy would start waving, right?
Totally.
Like,
Yeah,
was so weird that they just played that like it was something that people do, just hang on the bottom of the car.
Yeah, and the moment, and the funny thing is, the moment I said, that's ridiculous. I mean, you got speed bumps and all this other stuff, and he would be totally beat up. And then he faces and walks away, and he's got his shirts all ripped up and everything on the back, and he's got holes in. I'm like, okay.
Yep.
Answered.
Yep.
Yes, it did happen.
Asked and answered.
It was too much for me. Like, I really didn't need him portrayed as a Superman. At that point, it was like the thing where he fights off three guys with pipes was enough to get me to the point where I believe De Niro's character is the greatest person in the world in terms of physical prowess. I don't need this. They could have found something, right?
You know what else De Niro's really good at? I didn't
think that was an example of being superhuman. I think any one of us with a belt that your whatever winch that he used to attach himself to the bottom. I think any one of us could just hang for an hour.
I don't think hanging would be my question. Like I said, I think exhaust fumes, heat,
being
road,
slammed
road
against
rash.
Bumps.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
Go through one pothole and kill you.
It does seem unlikely that you'd come through as unscathed as he did. Depending on how long they were in it, I suppose. I don't know how long they were driving. They didn't really say.
I liked how he was brushing his little side hair though when he was in the bathroom.
With his little tiny mascara comb.
Yeah, that was nice. That was very nice. By the way, I was just thinking about De Niro performances and the ones I like the most and the ones I like the least. The one I think I like him most in is Awakenings. He's really good in that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That movie's great. Speaking of come out and play, yay, that guy's in it too. He's in it.
Okay, best De Niro. Anybody else got a best De Niro?
Think hard. I'll give it that one for now. What do you guys like?
Yeah. Like Taxi Driver? Casino. Because I was going to use Casino earlier if you asked me what my favorite Scorsese film was. And I'm going to have to say it's my favorite De Niro performance too.
Jeez. You and your Vegas.
Taxi Drivers. It's so early on.
Of course, it's a Vegas reference.
Yeah,
it's always a Vegas movie with Brian. What's your favorite movie with Nicolas Cage? Well, it's the one where they crash land in Vegas in the plane. That's my favorite. Well,
Con Air.
Wouldn't be leaving Las Vegas.
No. No, I think that's fine.
Vegas, when I did finally get out of Vegas.
It was 2016 where I finally watched Casino because I had never seen it, and it was streaming somewhere. Anyway, I agree. That's a great movie. I think that's real good, and he's really good. He's very sympathetic in it compared to what I thought. I thought it was going to be just another psycho. Yeah. And,
boy, Pesci's a badass in that film. Jeez.
He is a turd monkey.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Anyway, yes. Randy,
I was saying that he's good in The Intern because he's subtle. Mm. I think the most subtle and powerful he's been directed was by Michael Mann in Heat.
Mm.
And that's where I prefer De Niro, that place where he doesn't have to overact and he doesn't really have to do something that's far away from his natural personality.
I agree. That's a good one. So is Ronan. Ronan's an excellent example
Ronan's
of that.
Really good, yeah.
Heat. When is Heat streaming? Because we need to do Heat so bad.
We totally need to do Heat.
Seriously. When Michael Mann movies start streaming, I will have one on at work. Like I watched Miami Vice about 17 times at work. Just for the music. It's great. It's great background while you're
I like the Miami Vice movie. I know it's not a very popular pick, but I think it's fine. People are weird. They want it to be John Johnson and that other guy. But it's not. Yeah. I like it a lot. Brandon Dunaway, do you have a favorite?
Yeah, Taxi Driver.
Oh, yeah, it's a good one.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's such. I love how pure it is. It just seems right.
Yeah, he's really good in that. He's good in everything. Whatever. The only thing I didn't like him was that Golden Compass movie. He played like the flying captain ship dude. It's a shit. It's a piece of shit role.
He was
bad.
Also he also had a weird role in Machete and it didn't make any sense. Like he's supposed to play a over-the-top sheriff or something. I don't even remember the movie anymore, but I remember that De Niro wasn't any good.
Mm-hmm. The only sheriff I'll accept in modern times is Arnold Schwarzenegger.
No.
In Last Stand.
Well, don't know. Yeah, why not Barry Barry what's his name? You gotta accept I can't think of his name now. Frick. He's the old guy in a wheelchair in No Country for Old Men that Tommy Lee Jones goes and talks to. Barry.
Oh,
From Northern Exposure. I can't think of his name. He's a great sheriff, dude. One of the best sheriffs you'll ever have, ever. So I'm with you, but that guy. What's his name? Barry something. Oh, it's going to piss me off that I can't think of it. All right. Here's your start.
There's an upcoming Schwarzenegger film, and I don't know anything else about it except that it stars Kobe Smulders, and it's called Why We're Killing Gunther. And I just don't, I'm in. I don't care anything.
From the title is
Kobe Smulders and Arnold Schwarzenegger, and it's called Why We're Killing Gunther.
Filmed at Central Perk.
I like that Kobe Smulders.
It'll be a McLaren's. Come on, Dunaway. It'd be filmed at McLaren's.
And Colby Smulders anyway, is great. Oh,
directed by Taron Killam from Saturday Night Live.
Oh, yeah, really. Yeah.
All right.
Okay. Yeah,
isn't that weird?
That is. That's all of it. All of it now is weird.
Yeah. Is and weird. The plot synopsis is great. A group of eccentric assassins are fed up with Gunther, the world's greatest hitman, and decide to kill him. But their plan turns into a series of bungled encounters as Gunther seems to always be one step ahead, and Arnold Schwarzenegger is Gunther.
With Taron Killam,
Bobby Moynihan, Simone from New Girl.
Yeah.
Yep. Interesting.
Yeah. All right. Yep. You got me. Sounds interesting.
Okay.
I like Colby Smulders.
Yeah. You said that. Yeah.
She smolders.
That impression.
Mm-hmm. It's a weird name, though. Colby Smulders.
She's a great Maria Hill.
Yeah, she's good at that. She fits nicely in that suit. All right, what are we doing here? Oh, Star Trek Connections. Here you go. Sid Dutton was a matte painter for this movie. He also created matte paintings for Voyager and TNG and Nemesis as well.
Well, somebody's got to paint the matte.
Someone somewhere does. Mark Sawakwick was matte photographer. He also did that for The Final Frontier. And John Alvin was a poster artist. He designed and illustrated posters for Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country. Edward F. Herenguez was hairstylist for Nick Nolte. That must be a weird job.
And I'm done. I'm just done.
And he was makeup artist on Star Trek V, The Final Frontier, the worst movie ever. And then finally, Don Pulford. He was stunt double for Nick Nolte. He stunt doubled for William Shatner in Final Frontier and Undiscovered Country. So Shatner and Nolte, a connection finally made.
Interesting. Wow.
Soundtrack grade, I'd give it an R for ridiculous. It's pretty over the top, and I kind of liked it a lot.
Yeah, and the more I think about it, the more it makes sense to me that it was just a reuse of the original score.
Yeah.
And the original film score was by Bernard Herrmann. Like I said, this is one of the greats. If you have never heard of him, you just haven't watched old movies. He scored Psycho, North by Northwest, Citizen Kane, the original Cape Fear, Taxi Driver. He scored The Day the Earth Stood Still.
Wow.
Aren't we going to watch the new one?
Yeah, we should. The one with Keanu Reeves?
Yes.
We should do that. We should so do that. We watched John Wick again the other day.
Oh yeah.
Good, dude.
I
think it was this year. What is it on Netflix?
No, it comes out on March. In March.
It hasn't come out yet? Okay.
Yeah, theatrical deal. And I'm stoked about it. I don't know if they have to kill another dog, but whatever.
Oh, you're talking about
John
Wick. I was talking about Day the Earth Stood Still.
No. I don't know where that
John
is.
John Wick 2.
Yeah, I'm talking about John Wick
2. No, John Wick.
Yeah.
No.
Where, if Day the Earth Stood Still for Keanu Reeves is out there, we need to put that on the list ASAP. I've never seen it, and I really want to. So there's that.
ASAP Rocky, do it.
Let's get to the Twitter post. This is where you guys sum it up in 140 characters or less. Let's start with Randy.
Cape Fear, Martin Scorsese's worst film, is kind of like Hershey's worst chocolate. Scary and shitty.
All right. Well, there you go. I don't know what else to say to that. It's pretty good.
Thanks. I should have asked to go last.
No,
I'm sorry.
It's all good.
No.
Next up, it's all right. 140 characters is all you got. Hey, Brian Dunaway, what do you got?
Cape Fear, like someone asking you, what about your movies? I already watched them. Damn it, who put this camera here?
Nice. And finally, Brian Ibbett.
Cape Fear. Juliet Lewis goes on her second worst vacation.
Oh, nice. I think it looks nice, Daddy. All right.
She was only in Christmas Vacation, right?
Yes. Right, yes. Correct.
Right? There's Get only, off of me, you virus.
There's no All such right? There's no such thing as Rusty or the sister ever being the same actress twice. That's part
right.
of the joke.
Okay. Right? That's right.
Yeah.
That's too bad because they got a lot of really fun people to play those different roles.
I agree. But at the same time, I kind of like that they just rotate them out. There's something about that.
I think exactly. I think after the first couple, I think they probably said, I don't care if Anthony Michael Hall is available or Juliet Lewis is available. Let's rotate these kids out every movie. It'll be our little joke.
Yeah, I think it's a fun little joke for as long as it lasted.
But then didn't they bring... No, they didn't. That's right, because Ed Helms plays Rusty and Christina... Okay, all right.
Yeah.
Yep.
Dang.
Well, I don't know who the sister is in that scenario.
If you could have in the new one, if you could have cast anyone as Rusty who had previously played Rusty, who would it be?
Anthony Michael Hall.
Yeah.
Without
really?
Or no, I was thinking the Jackanopoulos or
whatever.
Ethan Embry.
Ethan Embry. Yes. He would have been my choice.
Okay,
for sure.
Yeah. No, you know what? You're right. Ethan Embry's pretty good. I like him generally.
He still looks like Rusty, whereas Anthony Michael Hall does not.
Yeah.
He looks like Biff from Back to the Future.
my second runner-up would have been Johnny Galecki, just because he's, he's around now.
Yeah.
I think it would have been interesting to see him make the movie.
Yeah, but he's only 4'3" or something. He's a little tiny person. Mm-hmm. wouldn't have worked. All right. Here's this was just handed to me. Hold on. Oh, shit. Look at this. It's the alternative title. You stalking me? I should have said you stalking to me. That's what I meant. You stalking to me is what I meant. And then
that was so good.
Or the other one is meet the stalkers. Look at this! What I did this week.
Oh, no, I like that.
Look at you.
Getting better finally after 300 plus episodes. I'm nailing it. We got a quick email here. These come to us at filmsec@gmail.com. This came from Phil. That's all he wrote, and it's very short.
Phil.
It says, "Hey. Ever going to do a Star Wars movie? Phil." Well, Phil.
Hey.
I'm
trying to.
I feel like we keep bouncing this around. We keep kind of talking back and forth about what to do. I tend to want to do this, but I don't know where to go. We've had arguments about prequels.
It would definitely have to be the prequels. And I would say Phantom Menace is too easy a target. I would say we do 3.
Oh,
or
the third one, eh? Two is the worst, I think. It's bad.
See, and I would argue I like 2 out of all the prequels. I like that one the best.
Right.
I'd be up for whatever, but I just think maybe we just have to decide and go for it, and who cares if it's streaming because everyone owns these.
Yeah.
At some point, we should just pick one. So maybe we put it up. You know what? I'm going to do a poll. I'm going to put it up on the Twitter feed, so follow us at FilmZack on Twitter. And I'll do that today, and it will list all the Star Wars movies outside of the newest ones, and then you guys vote.
Okay, wait. You can only list 4 things, right?
No, I can do not a Twitter poll. I'll do a straw poll.me poll or something where I can do 8 entries or whatever, 7,
okay,
6.
So,
well, we don't need any of the other ones besides the first 3 in the poll, do we? Really?
But I'd love to see it list 1 through 6, just because I'd like to know, like, do our audience really want us to sack the 4th episode? Maybe they do.
Yeah. I wouldn't be opposed to anything. I'm just curious what they think. And just so people know, the poll's not going to be the for sure. Like, we may still make an executive, thing and do it somewhere else. But I'm just curious what people will say. So watch for that. At FilmSack on Twitter. Thanks, Phil, for your email. And send your own emails into filmsack@gmail.com. Our next movie is...
Barton Fink.
Barton Fink, that's it. Barton Fink, the one of only 2, I think, Coen Brothers movies I've not seen.
Oh.
This one and The Burn After Reading or whatever it is. I've never seen that.
This is John Turturro and John Goodman, who have also been in several other Barton Coen Brothers films.
Yeah.
Notably in Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, John Goodman and John Turturro actually don't encounter one another. John Turturro's character is a toad during the
scene. Yeah.
By Big Dan, they call him, whatever, with the one with the eye patch. That's some fine fricassee, he says, and then hit him with a tree trunk. Pretty insane. But he's also, John Goodman, no stranger to, things like Raising Arizona and some other stuff. So it's going to be fun to watch these two regulars, these Coen Brothers regulars together, and I've never seen it, so I'm kind of excited to see how that is. So coming up next week, Barton Fink, then Superman 3, then Bedazzled, and then who knows more after that.
The original Bedazzled.
Yes, not the one with, what's the other one? Is there another one?
The new one with Brendan Fraser.
Oh, I have no idea what that is. I guess I'm in for a treat then. Dunaway, you know what that movie is? Bedazzled?
Yeah.
Okay.
No, the first one? Yeah. I prefer the one, more recent one, but with Elizabeth Hurley and Brendan Fraser. But, you know, whatever.
I don't know anything about the Bedazzler.
I've seen both.
I don't know what either of these are. I only know about the Bedazzler, the thing you used to buy to put stuff on your jeans.
This is exciting.
Yeah. Great. Is it
Scott, we're going to take Scott through some movies he's never seen.
Is it about magic people? Is that the deal?
It's about the devil.
Oh, you just spoiled it for Scott.
That's fine. I'm still watching.
It's revealed within the first 5 minutes, right?
Don't give Scott the twist.
All right. It happens in the first 5 minutes. All right. I'm sure it's not quite the Shyamalan twist I'm used to. Oh, by the way, I keep hearing nothing but like amazing things about the new Shyamalan movie, which I've stayed spoiler free on.
Stop there. We cannot say any words.
Yeah, I want to see it though. We're,
it's only been out for 8 days. We gotta wait and see if
it's called
everybody sees it.
Well, we can say the name of it. Split. Yeah.
Split. Sure. Yes. Just nothing else.
It's got Xavier in it. The young
McAvoy.
McAvoy. I like him a lot.
Yeah.
Anyway, going to check that out, see if it's true that our buddy M. Night Shyamalama Ding Dong is back in the seat again, baby.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to do it for us. Thank you all for being here. Come on back next week for more. Filmsack.com is the website. You can leave us voicemails at 801-471-0462, emails at filmsack@gmail.com, and find us on Twitter at Filmsack. Watch for that poll going up today about Star Wars. That will do it for us, for me, for Brian, and for Randy.
Mm-hmm.
See you next time.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Yes, get more at frogpants.com.
Yes, well done, everyone. Yes. Well, I was about to